For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Just want to welcome you all to the Xenos Parenting Meeting. This is some meeting we have once a month, usually the first Wednesday of the month, as long as there's not a snow day. And it's during the school year. So we have, let's see, this is March. We have two more for this school year in April and May. And I forgot who's coming up next month, but it's, we always, what is it? Chris Deacon, she's teaching on, sibling rivalry. Yeah, that should be a good one, huh? I think she's had five kids, so she probably knows a lot about that. But I just wanted to welcome you all here. And before I introduce who we're going to be bringing up, let me just pray for us. God, we're really grateful to be here this morning. Thank you, God, that you love our kids, that you love us, and you want to help us to be good parents. And so we just really pray that you would help us hear from you this morning. Help us know how to be able to practically apply the things that we hear this morning to the way that we parent. And just pray, God, that you give us wisdom and guide us. And just thank you, God, that we don't have to do this alone. Amen. Okay, so I'm excited to bring up Paul and Becky Alexander. They're willing to teach on, are you being an overprotective parent? Paul works at Xenos and does a lot of administrative and teaching. And then Becky also works at Harambe in the second grade with Chris Patch. And they have two girls, 10 and 11, and they're going to share with us some thoughts this morning.
Hey, guys.
Well, how you guys doing? Good, you made it. Congrats. There are some people here with a lot of little babies. Good job getting out here and on time. I was always late packing the car up. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's good to see you all here. So we're talking about overprotective parenting, and to kind of give you an idea of where we're going this morning, I'm going to talk about why we chose this topic, what is overprotective parenting, what kind of motivates these parenting choices to overparent or overprotect when we parent, and some of the issues that can come from being overprotective when we're dealing with our kids. And then Paul is going to lead us into the promised land with hope and what's the alternative to being overprotective when we parent our kids. So I'm going to jump right in because I'm on a schedule and I love talking. Oh, Paul put this slide in. So why we chose this topic, that's our family. We went to Mexico last year. Our older daughter, the one without the hat, is 12, and our younger daughter, Ava, she's Claire, and Ava, she's 10. So I wanted to qualify this too as, like, it's easy to do a teaching on overprotective parenting before you have teenagers. So, you know, look me up in like 5 years when we get into like driving and going off to college. Okay, so why we chose this topic. First off, you know, we're all aware that there are a lot of crazy things going on in the world. A lot of school tragedies, a lot of tragedies in public places. It seems like every time you watch the news, something else is crazy is going on. And so Paul and I, you know, like all of you, experience fear on a daily basis when it comes to our kids going out into the world and what they're going to experience and how the world is going to impact them. And so we live with a lot of fear in parenting, as I'm sure a lot of you do too. The other reason why, sorry, I'm taking too many breaths in. They're going to have to cut that out. Okay, so the other reason why we chose this topic is because, well, I just want to say I'm grateful that my kids are like 10 and 12, because parents of young children now, we're talking babies and toddlers, you guys are flooded with a ton of information. You've got online stuff, Facebook, blogs, all kinds of research studies that are coming out, and, you know, every study swears that if you do this one thing wrong, your kid is going to be so dumb, or they're not going to be able to make friends, or they're going to have these major long-term issues if, you know, you give them peanut butter before they're 1 year old, which I know they actually just changed that. But so I think that we're just bombarded by information as parents constantly that communicates to us, if you get it wrong, your kid's really going to have a lot of problems. You are totally ruining them for the rest of their lives. And so I think that this is like a real thing that we have to deal with regularly, is the information we're taking in And really, the desire is for our kids to be healthy adults. That's why we probably tend to overprotect. And then, I'm a social worker, and I was doing my continuing education credits. Woo! And I was reading a study on adolescent anxiety and depression. And I came across this quote from a study in 2000. It said that they found that among adolescents, parental overprotection and parental rejection were significantly associated with increased rates of social phobia in children. This study showed that overprotection increases the risk for anxiety disorders, but not depressive disorders, though rejection correlates with depressive disorders. So what is this saying? It's basically saying that, you know, something we obviously know, if you neglect your kids, they're going to have some issues. They're going to struggle with depression. But then what's surprising is that if we move to the other direction of the spectrum, if we are the extreme and we're overprotective in our parenting, it actually fosters anxiety in our children. And they can struggle with anxiety more as adolescents and adults. And I found that kind of surprising, but the more I thought about it, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so what is overprotective parenting? I'm going to define it as it's when we try to rescue our children from any and every uncomfortable circumstance. We are trying to make sure our kids do not experience any discomfort or suffering. And we make a lot of our parenting choices based on our desire for them to never be uncomfortable. I want to make this qualification. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't have healthy boundaries for your kids. As their parents, we are called to provide a certain amount of protection. We are called to create safe and healthy boundaries for our kids. Like, I'm not suggesting that you let your 2-year-old run into the street, play in traffic. That's not a good idea. But we also know that our boundaries and how they're implemented are going to change depending on your child and their age. For example, when my kids were little, we lived on campus just down the street. And, you know, I would hold their hand when we crossed the street. But when you grow up in a city, you have to know how to cross streets because you're surrounded by streets, you know, everywhere you go. So when they got a little older, 5 or 6 probably, we practiced crossing the street where they would run ahead of me. You know how they do. And I'd be like, okay, guys, show me how you do this. How do you, let me see you cross this street well, right? And now, you know, they're 10, I don't hold their hand anymore when I cross the street because if they haven't figured out how to not get hit by a car, you know, they're in big trouble. So when we create these boundaries, it's going to change as they get older. So that's the qualification. That's not overprotective parenting. So I have this list. It came off a website. It's pretty funny. So here's some funny indicators that you might be an overprotective parent. One is you have 10 bottles of sanitizer available at your front door and the back door and in everybody's room. You still cut your kid's food and hold hands while crossing the street. Your kid will turn 18 next week. What I was thinking with this too is if you make your kids go to the bathroom, you know, we have a 12-year-old, we were on a road trip, and it's tempting to tell her she needs to go to the bathroom. But she is 12. She knows when she needs to go to the bathroom. So if you're still telling your kids to go potty, and they're like 17, you might be an overprotective parent. Okay, sorry. When someone tells you to calm down, you look at them as if they were delusional. Calm down, there's crazy stuff going on. It doesn't matter how many people tell you to calm down, they're crazy, you're in the right for being so worried and concerned all the time. They need to get with the program. And this is my favorite one right here, just rectal thermometers. If you use rectal thermometers, which I have, so I struggle with this too, guys. Right. Okay, this is not serious. Okay, so for serious. Okay, you may be an overprotective parent. Here are some indicators. I got this. Let me look up the guy's name. Sorry, I'm not turning my pages. Okay, his name's Dr. Gregory Ramey. He is out of the Dayton Children's Hospital Pediatric Center for Mental Health Resources. And he had a list that I thought was really good to try and help us figure out if maybe we struggle with overprotective parenting. So the first one is that we try to solve all of our children's problems for them. This is really difficult, and it's super tempting to do. When we're moving in, anytime our child sort of gets themselves in trouble, to fix it for them instead of letting them figure it out, mm-hmm. we might struggle with overprotective parenting. I know for our kids, my one daughter, my older daughter, she's very forgetful. She's a sanguine like me. And, you know, we're forgetting our lunch every day. And I'm solving this problem for her every day by taking her lunch to school and making it sure it gets there. And it dawned on me that because I was rescuing her from the discomfort of not having food, she's never going to remember her lunch. And so at her school, they actually let other kids give kids food at lunch. So maybe she was getting better food by not bringing her lunch. I don't know. So anyway, one day I called the school. I felt like a horrible mom. And I said, okay, she is not to get any food from anybody at school today. And I told her that when she got out of the car. And she's kind of stubborn, so she was like, fine. And I was like, okay, just saying, no food today. And the school office was like, well, can we at least give her milk? And I actually hesitated. I was like, she's going to feel it today. Anyway, so I did let her have milk. She probably was very uncomfortable that afternoon, but she never forgot her lunch again. So here's some, you know, when we try and solve all their problems, you know, there's something about dealing with the consequences of our actions. There's some natural teachers there. But if you're someone who finds yourself always running into fix your kids' problems, you might struggle with this. Maybe you have frequent contact with your child's school. Now, there's a category here for, you know, bullying, or if you really feel like your kid's being persecuted. But, you know, it's tempting to try and rescue our kids from difficult life things, like teachers that they don't like, or not getting a good grade on a test, or kids that are jerks at school. But we have to really think through, like, is this something that they need to learn how to handle? How do you handle a teacher that you don't really like? How do you, you know, what do you do when you don't do your homework? Well, you don't get recess. But the temptation is for us to move in and call the school, well, they don't have their homework because of X, Y, and Z, and please be so nice to my kid. I don't want them to suffer at all. So maybe if you're someone who's frequently contacting the school, you might struggle with this. Does everything to guarantee their child will always be successful? Isn't this so tempting? We don't want our kids to fail. And this is a big thing in our culture, too. Like, everybody gets a medal. Everybody gets a prize. We ran into this a few weeks ago. Our younger daughter, they did the Olympics at school. And, you know, there's four teams. There's three medals, four teams, and her team didn't get a medal. And she was just...
It was Australia.
It was Australia.
Winter team, do they?
What are you going to do? Anyway, so she didn't get a medal, and she was messed up about it. She was, you know, you could tell she had been sad, but did she die? No, but it was tempting. You know, I'm, like, so bad at this. I'm like, you know, I'm the parent who's like, let's go get a donut. You having a bad day? We need French fries and Frosties. We actually have those days at our house, but we're... You know, the temptation is to always want to come in and always make sure they're successful. And that's not really reality, right? Because we're broken people and we're going to mess up. You might be an overprotective parent if you're overly supportive and sympathetic. This goes along with the one before. Like I said, we have French fry and Frosty days. But we want to, if you're a parent who is moving in when your kids are having emotional distress at any level and trying to make everything better or being overly sympathetic, we want to be careful about that, because it's like, you know, who in here has like little babies that are just walking, learning to walk? Anybody? You know, like when your kid trips and what you don't want to do is go, you know, you don't want to do that, because then they look at you and they're like, oh my God, I should be crying right now, you know, and you're like, no, I'm trying to avoid the tantrum. That doesn't really change, you know, like, we want to be supportive, and we can acknowledge, I see that you're scared. I understand that you're frustrated, angry, upset. But we don't want to feed so much into it that we're actually making them get more upset about situations that they're in. Does that make sense? Okay.
Becky's better at this. It was a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, our youngest one, who's 10, would have me check all around her bedroom for monsters or whatever. People that broke in. And Becky was finally like, no, it's time for bed. You check it yourself.
Well, I realize that I'm like looking under her bed every night, and I'm like, I don't really think there's anything under there. Why am I looking under her bed every night? There's nothing. I know there's nothing there. She's the one that thinks. I was like, look under your own bed. I'm not very nice, but.
I'm the softie.
Yeah, he is. Okay, the other temptation, maybe you're overprotective if you're managing friendships. And this is hard because when our kids are little, we have more control over the people our children spend time with. And then they get bigger. Like Claire just went into a public junior high. And I did lots of horrible things in junior high. I'm like your guys' worst junior high nightmare. So I prayed. I prayed and prayed, prayed a lot for her. And I was praying against a certain group of type of friends. And then she made her first friend and brought her home. And I was like, whoa, I didn't even think to pray against this kind of friend. Oh, my God. You know, we want to manage our kids' friendships. But we also, you know, we want to coach them. And Claire's figuring it out. She's like, this friend's kind of hard. I'm like, yeah. You might want to be careful about that. But the temptation will be to manage their friendships. Maybe we talk too much. Obviously, I struggle with that. And it's not just talking too much. It's always talking about your kids. Always worried. Every friend you run into, you're like, you know, this, this, and this happens. You know, it starts when they're babies. Everyone talks about poop, the color, consistency, what's going on there. And it just continues as they get older. And it doesn't matter who you talk to. Your friends, their teachers, your pediatrician. You're just never affirmed that your kid is okay. And if you feel like that's something you experience, if you can never get peace when it comes to how your kid's doing, or you talk about them and nothing else, you should ask your friends. They'll tell you. You might struggle with overprotective parenting. How about this one? Expects few household chores or responsibilities because, you know, the world revolves around your kid and what they want and what they need and how they feel in the moment is what sort of dictates their everyday life. And I think this changes with size of household. I have friends with four kids and they're like, yeah, this is, everyone's got to pull their own weight. I can't do that much laundry. So we just want to make sure that, you know, does our world revolve around them? Are we letting them take responsibility? Because really in every life situation, they're probably going to be working on a team of people, and they're going to have to pull their own weight, whether it's fair or not, and they've got to learn how to work hard. And so chores and responsibilities is one of the easiest ways to get that into your household. And an overprotective parent will discourage their kids from taking any risks, right? We're afraid they're going to get hurt. So if there's any situation where your kids might get hurt, then we won't allow them to participate. I actually read somewhere online that they might start taking swings out of playgrounds because swings are dangerous. So if you're, you know, if you feel like you're got your kid wrapped in bubble tape, maybe you struggle with overprotective parenting. Okay, so, sorry, I'm going long. Okay, what motivates us into the direction of probably overprotective parenting? Well, one of my hypotheses on this is that we take data and we kind of use it against ourselves. So several years ago, Harvard came out with a study on toxic stress, and this is what it's defined as. Toxic stress is the strong, unrelieved activation of the body's stress management system in the absence of protective adult support. So you're in a stressful situation, and your adrenaline kicks in, your heart rate goes up, you're stressed out. How you feel when you're stressed out? Without caring adults to buffer children, the unrelenting stress caused by extreme poverty, neglect, abuse, or severe maternal depression can weaken the architecture of the developing brain with long-term consequences for learning, behavior, and both physical and mental health. Now, if you're melancholy at all, when I first read this, my first question was, what is long-term stress mean? Are my kids experiencing long-term stress? What does neglect mean? You know, if they don't get their snack right away, am I neglecting them? We are like tempted to like latch on to these things. And
if you let them cry.
If you let them cry. There was a study that came out a couple years ago about letting your kid cry and how that adversely affects the brain. And, you know, when we take this kind of information in the tidbits that we get from friends online and stuff, it makes us super stressed out because we don't want our kids to have messed up brains, right? So I think that this is one reason why we can swing into the extreme of overprotective parenting. Now, with toxic stress, we're talking about significant neglect, being in stressful situations for days and weeks at a time without any adult buffer. And so that means that, like, loss of income, loss of housing, these kind of things can happen. And kids are super resilient. And the studies show that if there's a positive adult presence in their life, the outcomes will be okay, even under really extreme suffering or mm-hmm. difficult circumstances. So that should be encouraging. But I guess what I'm saying is, when you see something like this, make sure you do a little bit more research to find out what exactly it's saying. Because if you're here at this teaching, you do not struggle with neglecting your kids. Guaranteed. Okay, here's another thing. We hate suffering ourselves. Okay, here's a survey. How many of you had crappy life circumstances growing up? How many of you make parenting decisions so that your children won't have to go through the same crappy circumstances you did? Me. I'm so guilty of this. Yeah, we hate suffering, which it would kind of be weird if you were like, I love it. But we hate it. We hate suffering. We hate seeing our kids suffer. And we think back over our lives and the things that we suffered through, and we make a lot of our decisions in parenting based on not wanting our kids to go through the same thing. I have a really dumb example, but I just want you to know that I really do struggle with it. So when I was growing up, you know, blue collar, hardworking, we always had food, but we didn't have a lot of food choices, right? So there was never the fancy snack. You know those gushers with the juice inside? They came out when I was a kid. Never had gushers, right? Name brand cereal, didn't happen. I don't even remember being asked what kind of cereal I wanted as a kid, because the goal wasn't what I wanted to eat. The goal was to feed me, right? So I never went hungry, but I didn't have those snacks, right? And so as an adult, I'm like, that kind of sucked a little bit. I don't want my kids to have to go through the same kind of suffering, right? So I'll buy them any snack food they want. They get to pick whatever cereal they want, and I give it to them. Now, am I ruined because I didn't get the kind of cereal I wanted? No. No gushers. I'm okay. I only had to go to counseling for it once. But we do this, right? We're like terrified. And the reality is that our kids are different than we are. They're going to respond differently. And they are going to suffer, right? We'll talk about that in a second. So yeah, we hate suffering ourselves. And so we don't want our kids to suffer. But that's something that they're going to experience. They're going to have difficult times. Okay, the third thing is that in America, our culture tells us that we should never suffer, right? This is the reality that we live in. Everything is right away. Right now, if I'm in a drive-through line and I have to wait longer than 30 seconds for my meal because I am uncomfortable, and I should not have to be uncomfortable to get this Arby's whatever, you know? And so our culture tells us we shouldn't suffer, and if we are, that we need to get out of it as quick as possible. At our fingertips and disposal at all times, we have tons of ways to distract ourselves from suffering. You know, your cell phone, your Facebook page, that video game, binge watching that TV show. I mean, I do it all, guys. Watching that movie over and over. But we avoid suffering at all costs. Suffering is like the worst thing that could happen to you in American culture. And we need to be aware of that. That that's like not reality. The reality is that we are going to. And actually, some forms of suffering are good. You know, like when you work hard to learn a new skill, there's suffering involved, but it winds up being good. Or working through conflict with a friend. Like, that's really difficult, but on the other end, you usually have better relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm doing okay. Okay, so what are some of the issues with overprotective parenting? So I have a study of my own and brain development. So one thing that you guys need to be aware of and that I need to think through too is that in order for there to be healthy brain development, our children need to experience and learn how to deal with acute stress, which is stress, intense stress in short amounts, okay? It helps their brain growth. Look at this out of that same Harvard study that did the toxic stress thing. They say learning how to cope with adversity is an important part of healthy development. Moderate, short-lived stress responses in the body can promote growth. So actually, your kid being a little uncomfortable sometimes is really good for them. Mm-hmm. So you can all take a sigh of relief. Right? So this guy, he is a doctor. He's at a school in New York. He says that acute stress, which is the response to a frightening, competitive, or dangerous stimulus that is completely resolved within seconds or minutes, it's a short burst of stress, then it's done. Many forms of play, especially physical play, involve some level of acute stress. Sports, video games, and other competitions and contests are strong inducers of acute stress. And that's part of why we enjoy them, right? That's why you like getting on that roller coaster, you get that pump of adrenaline. Evidence is mounting that acute stress is not just fun, but beneficial, even necessary for childhood development. Stress has been studied in a variety of animals, and the general conclusion is that acute, mild stress is beneficial for brain development, social skills and behaviors, and even intelligence. It has even been shown that acute stress, unlike chronic stress, is good for the immune system. So, yeah, we're doing our kids a favor by letting them, like, have to deal with difficult circumstances. The bottom line, he says, is that research is showing that safe, controlled amounts of acute stress may actually be good for us, especially as children. Safe stress is a way to relieving a stress valve that actually lowers levels of chronic stress over the long term. Our children are actually learning how to cope with and deal with stress. While we should all strive to protect our children from chronic stress, depriving them of healthy forms of safe stress may leave them unable to deal with stress as adults, right? If we're not letting our kids experience small doses of stress on the playground, at school, in their relationships, when they mess up, when they become older, they will not have the set of skills they need to cope with stress as they become young adults and into adulthood. Does that make sense what I'm saying? And it's cool because it's actually good for him. I found this to be very relieving because, you know, the goal to have them never suffer is just impossible. So to find out that a little suffering is actually good is kind of nice. So the other problem, which I've kind of alluded to, is that we're not really setting them up for what they will be confronted with their whole life, which is different levels of suffering. So that same guy that did the study that had the different aspects of overprotecting parenting, he says that overprotective parenting fails to teach children about the real world. As adults, we know that there are times when the world is unfair, confusing, and even evil. And children need to learn how to deal in a positive way with such negative attributes rather than being sheltered from the dark side of life. Mm. And this is hard. This is a hard reality. But this is what our kids are going to be facing. And we don't want to have, you know, adolescents and young adults and even adults that, you know, don't know how to handle stress that is kind of minor. Like, you know, when you're in college and you might not get the grade you want on that paper, so that is not the end of the world. But if our kids don't experience stress when they're young in these ways, when that kind of thing happens, it kind of unhinges them emotionally when they're older, because they have no barometer for what appropriate levels of stress for different situations are, because we've spent so much time trying to have them avoid those difficult circumstances. Does that make sense? So little things feel more extreme than they really are, and what we really want are kids that will grow up, be able to live independently and healthy lives, and actually run their own households when they're older. And if we're not, there's going to be stress and there's going to be suffering, and so we want to equip them to deal with what they're actually going to be confronted with in the real world. Okay, third, this is something that I've been really challenged by thinking about this stuff. When we are regularly communicating to our children that they cannot handle situations and that they should be terrified, they will believe us. So when you are communicating to their your children, and when I'm communicating to my children that they can't handle a situation because we run in and rescue them, they're going to believe that they can't handle a situation. They're going to believe it. And they're going to believe that they can't handle it without us. And this is really hard. I'm going to spend 1 or 2 minutes on this, and then I'm going to hand it over to Paul. This is probably the hardest part of overprotective parenting, because it's hard for us to believe that our kids can handle difficult situations. And I have a few examples of this. Here's a good example. So our 10-year-old is a really fearful kid. She's always been more fearful. It's always been harder to push her into risk-taking, dealing with failure. She is a perfectionist. She is very relational at the same time. And so just this week, she got into a conflict with one of her friends. Well, actually, several of her friends. I got feedback that she was kind of being a not great friend and being kind of demanding in her relationships. And so I went to her and I was like, hey, you know, I hear that, you know, you're not being a very good friend. We talked that through. We talked through apologizing. It was great. And then when she went to apologize, her best friend said, well, my mom's really mad at you. She's really angry at you. So I go and pick up my fearful, melancholy child from school. And the first thing she says to me yesterday is, so-and-so is mad at me. They're angry at me. They said they were angry at me. And you could just see her starting to melt down, because this is like crushing, right? It's crushing as adults when we think someone's mad at us. But for, you know, a 10-year-old to think like an adult, she was like, she's like my second mom. She's like a mentor and she's angry at me. Mom, what am I going to do? And I, in that moment, the temptation is to believe she can't handle this. I need to call this mom, talk to her, and then communicate to Ava what's going on. And then I realized that Ava is going to have to do this herself. Ava's going to have to talk to this mom, because I know the mom, right? I know that she's not really angry. Although, you know, you can't be too mad at a mom who's frustrated with your kid for sinning against, you know, theirs. But I'm really close to this woman, so I was like, okay, we're going to call her up. And she's like, no, I can't talk to her. I can't do it. And I was like, I wasn't even listening to her. I was dialing the phone number. And then I get a hold of my friend, and I just shove the phone in Ava's hand, right? And so there's a temptation in a situation like that to buy into the fears that your kids have. I can't have this conversation. It's too much. And she was so stressed out, guys. She hung up the phone, and she's like, Mom, I'm not even sad, but I feel like I have to cry. I'm so stressed out right now. And I was like, go ahead, girl. You can cry all you want. You know, like, that is stressful. I would cry, too. But what we do is we buy into believing that they can't handle things. And we really have to think through, is that true? My last example. Sorry, Paul.
You're fine.
My last example is our 12-year-old went into junior high this year, a public junior high. And, you know, I was actually terrified. I had, you know, junior high kids are mean, crazy. That's, I mean, if you know any junior high kids, that's the truth. They're crazy and mean. And I was really scared to send her into that environment. And I had to really think this through, like, can Claire handle this when she goes into the doors? And I actually had to think to myself, every one of you guys, I myself walked into junior high on 2 legs, walked out on 2 legs. I was breathing when I went in. I was breathing when I came out. You know, I've only had to have a little bit of counseling because of the stuff that happened in junior high. But it'll, you know, I'm okay. You all seem okay. He seems okay. And so she'll be okay. And Paul was really scared. Like, he was like, I'm going to drive her the first, because, you know, we're also riding the bus for the first time. And if junior high is scary, junior high buses, I'm sure, are a terrifying environment. Anything can happen on the bus. Those bus drivers have no authority. I've been on a bus. I know what this is like. So I was scared. He's like, I'm driving her to school. And I had to, like, suck it in. I had to, like, I was, like, praying over here, like, oh, God, I'm so scared. And then I would be, like, with Claire, like, all right, you can do this. You're going to go in there, and you're going to be okay. And if kids are jerks, we'll figure it out. And then I was over here like, oh, my God, dear God, please, you know. But she's fine. She's made friends. Things are, she just loves junior high. Weird. She's only in 6th grade, though. She says she likes it better than her private school. Like, it was hard. And on this end of it, you know, she was scared. She didn't think she could handle it. And I could have believed that, too. And that's the temptation. We can buy into believing that our kids can't handle it too, but we really need to take a step back and think it through. Can they handle this? Will they be okay if everything goes wrong? And the answer is usually yes. So now I'm going to hand it over to Paul, now that I've made you scared that you've ruined your child's brain and that you're doing everything wrong. He's going to make us feel better. I'm going to sit down here, too.
Maybe. Hey, guys. I'm actually super grateful that I've got that God gave me a wife that can love my daughters, and she really trains them and pushes them. We are pretty laid-back parents. A couple examples here. Here we went to Mexico last year. Not Cancun. Doesn't look like Cancun, does it? And helped at an orphanage. We helped at a ministry. There's my oldest daughter there. They're pouring wet cement in there. We built a sidewalk around. And, you know, kind of a scary place to go. You hear stories about Mexico, but the kids still talk about it as the trip. One of their best experiences of their life was going here. So glad we did that. Here they are. Here she is climbing. This is a climbing gym that has...
She's tethered to something.
Yeah, she's tethered. That rope there's something. That's our one-year-old. No, just kidding. Really into climbing. So that's cool. A little scary, though. She's going, you know, way up to the ceiling and back. Here they are. They were racing across these giant sequoia trees last summer that had fallen. Pretty cool. Pretty wide on top, so, you know, not too bad. But there's a little risk to that, letting them go. Here they are. This one scared me to death. This is where I'm glad Becky's here to push them. We were in the Grand Canyon, and I'm the whole time like, get away from the edge, because there's so much... And I go off to make a phone call.
And I'm like, let's go over to the edge, guys. Let's go.
Well, I leave for 5 minutes to make a phone call, and I come back.
Okay, this is what really happened. Okay, so me and Ava go off to the side, right? And I'm like, okay, Ava, check this out. We could dangle our feet over the edge of the Grand Canyon. So, you know, I didn't, like, jump over to that thing. I was, like, sliding in on my butt, you know, like, getting there. And then here comes Claire. She had just been with Paul. And she's like, Mom, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, come on, Claire. It'll be fine. And she's a rule follower. And she's like, no. Dad said I can't come over there. I'm like, come on, you only live once. Come on over here. Sneak on down. Come on, let's go. You only live once. That's the moral of the story, really. Okay, so then I'm like, come on. And so she finally relents. She really had only been sitting there for 30 seconds. And then Paul comes around the corner, and you know what he says? Claire, what are you doing? So Claire got in trouble. Uh-huh. I mean, I couldn't confess, but it's pretty funny.
I was composed enough to take a picture. But, you know, that's a memory. And I'm glad Becky... Kind of glad Becky pushed her to do that. Won't go too far. But risk-taking, like you're saying, this is life. This is living life and letting your kids live life. And instead of helicoptering them all the time and living their life through them. But, you know, so we're laid back some. We're also, like I said, scared. There's my Claire on the first day of middle school. And I'd put this on Facebook with like a comment like, I'm so bummed out today. Losing my little girl, right? And, you know, one story Becky didn't tell was that very day. Here's what it did. We sent her in unable to protect her from whatever was at that middle school. And we told her to pray to God for help. And that day, she knew no one at this school, by the way. And she prayed at recess. To meet someone, and she walked up to a girl, made friends with this girl who ended up coming to Bible study with her and receiving Christ that day. So cool. Just this, made this friend that day. And what was that? That's her getting to know her Father in heaven. That's going to be with her when we can't. Here's another one. This is another hard story. Last year, we took in our twin nieces. Their mother, there's a lot of bad stuff in their family. They needed a place to live, 17 years old. And they came and lived with us, and they had gone through so much, and it was so hard having them in our house. And what unnerved me, they would fight, and there was mental illness stuff, and we spent lots of time at the hospital calling police. There was one day I was gone, but Becky had taken the girls out, all four of them, including ours. And the two twins got in a physical fight with each other in the car with my girls across them. And I come home from whatever happened, and I get my girls in the room, and I'm like, is this too much for you guys to handle? Do we need to kick these guys out? Because I've had enough of my girls being around this horrible situation. And you know what? I learned a lesson from my little one, Ava, my little scared one. She started tearing up and said, Dad, if they leave, then they're not going to get to know about God, and they need to be here. Here I am trying to protect my kids, and they are filled with mercy for their nieces who need a place to stay. And it ended up 3 months later, my little one got to be in the room when one of the twins received Christ with her. My girl outdoing me. Here I'm thinking, this is too much for her. And it was a hard year for all four of us. But looking back, it's like there's no regrets there. They learned a lot. This was a hard situation. And there they were. That's them, the twins, when they graduated high school that year. Something that they probably would not have done without God sending them to us. So this is good. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, it's really hard here. Probably what's in your mind is, here I got these specific situations. Am I overparenting or not in this situation? I bet you got questions like that. And really, I think in a lot of cases you can't. It's hard to draw the line. There is a definitely being protective, which is good, not letting your two-year-old walk in the street. And there's definitely being overprotective, not letting your kid ever fail. But where is that line? And a lot, we have questions like that. And I don't think, I can't, and you know, a lot of times it's relative to your kid and who it is. What's hard with parenting is we all got our own styles and we hear different things, and we can easily end up in fights here over this is too overparenting and this isn't. And I don't know if we need to go there, but what I want to talk about is here's a couple of signs. Becky gave one there, the list there. One is a scary one, asking people that know you, do you see this in me? Do you think I overparent? That's a hard question, but I think valuable. If you got someone you trust who's close to you. Another one, like Becky was mentioning too, does the risky, here's a question, in a situation, does the risky outcome here have a potentially beneficial lesson or outcome? The two-year-old running into the street doesn't. It's got a potentially horrible outcome that's not worth any lesson, right? But trying to ride their bike when they could fall and skin their knee has a potentially life-changing, security-growing accomplishment that's worth maybe a couple of skinned knees, right? I think that's the kind of math we need to do in our head, the calculation. Is there a potential benefit here? But what I wanted to talk about, I think the main underlying issue with overprotective parenting is our anxiety as parents. There's no greater gift and no more important thing that God has given us than our kid. And what I want to talk about today is how to deal with our anxiety that leads us to be overprotective from a biblical perspective. What does the Bible have to say? And the concept I want to talk about quickly is the idea of dedicating your child to God. We get this concept from 1 Samuel 9 through 11, the story of Hannah. She was a woman who was unable to have kids for many years, and this was very hard on her. And it says that once after a sacrificial meal at Shiloh, Hannah got up and went to pray. Eli the priest was sitting at his customary place beside the entrance of the tabernacle. Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. And she made this vow, O Lord of heaven's armies, if you will look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you. He will be yours for his entire lifetime. And as a sign that he has been dedicated to the Lord, his hair will never be cut. I've taken that vow. Just kidding. No. Interesting. So she, notice this prayer, very personal, not a ritualistic prayer. Some people think the God of the Bible, you need to ritualistically. Here she is, God pouring out her heart to him. a God that she knows loves her and a potential kid if she has it. A God that's so good that she knows that if I have one, he's worth giving to God. Kid's worth giving to God. And it's pretty cool. Ends up, you know, the book's called 1 Samuel. That was what led to Hannah having Samuel the prophet as her kid, who ended up being God's man in the kingdom of Israel for many years. Interesting. How could we apply this? There's one book. Here's a book I recommend, and I'm going to quote from this book. It'll be most of what I talk about. The Power of a Praying Parent by Stormy O'Martin. Recommend this. She says, I was painfully aware, talking about her bad childhood growing up, I was painfully aware that I didn't have a positive parenting experience to imitate. I was nervous and anxious when my first child was born. Like Becky was saying, a lot of us feel that way, don't we? I feared I would do to him what he had done to me, or what had been done to me. I read every book available on the subject of parenting and attended each Christian child-rearing seminar I could find, like you guys. I tried to do my best with all this good and helpful information, but it was never enough. I had countless agonizing concerns for my son's social, spiritual, emotional, and mental growth, but most compelling of all, I feared that something bad might happen to him. Kidnapping, drowning, disfiguring accidents, irreparable injuries, diseases, sexual molestation, abuse, rape, or death all played across my mind as possible for his future. You ever had those thoughts run across your mind at night trying to sleep? But this might happen to my kid. So horrible. As much as I tried not to be an overreacting parent, every newspaper, magazine article, or TV newscast on crime made me more concerned for his welfare. Plus, we lived in Los Angeles, a city where crime was rampant. It was more than I could handle. One day in prayer, I cried out to God, saying, Lord, this is too much for me. I can't keep a 24 hours a day, moment by moment, watch on my son. How can I ever have peace? Are any of you there? I can't do this. Over the next few weeks, the Lord spoke to my heart about entrusting Christopher to him. Entrusting your child to God. My husband and I had dedicated our son to God in a church service, but God wanted more than that. He wanted us to continue giving Christopher to him on a daily basis. This didn't mean that we would now abdicate all responsibility as parents. Rather, we would declare ourselves to be in full partnership with God. He would shoulder the heaviness of the burden and provide wisdom, power, protection, and ability far beyond ourselves. We would do our job to discipline, teach, nurture, and train up a child in the way he should go, knowing that when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22:6. We were to depend on God to enable us to raise our child properly, and he would see to it that our child's life was blessed. Wow. That's a pretty big relief for her, isn't it? Have you done this? This might sound hokey. It's pretty significant to me. Here's a picture of my mother and father. That's me with the hair down there. Used to be cute. My mother's testimony, she didn't grow up a Christian, but she says that her and my dad used to play this pot-smoking game where you took a hit from, you watched the 700 Club, and every time they said, praise the Lord, you took a hit from the bong. That was the game. And she said that she'd watch it, but then sometimes she'd watch it without my dad, and that there was one time when I was little, this is her story, she says, when I was little, I was really sick. And she ended up praying to God and said to God, God, if you heal Paul, I will give my life to you and I'll give him to you. And she says, next morning when I woke up, I was perfectly fine. And that from that, she dedicated me to God and herself and started following him. And you know what? She died 7 years ago, pretty young. But God has always been there with me. And even after she's gone and she can't help me anymore, God is still with me. Gave me a great wife and friends and greatest thing she ever did. The best hand she could have put me in, besides her own, because of her love. And this is, there's a relief there. Even when she's gone, her son's still being watched. And that's the kind of God we're dealing with. I don't know what you know about the Bible. Some of you, I think, maybe this is your first time at church. But the God of the Bible is one that loves you, that knows that you are not perfect as a parent, knows that you are overwhelmed and stressed. And you know, part of what Becky just said, it's not only are you stressed out about your kid, but you're being stressed out about your kid might be hurting your kid. Now you're stressed out about that, right? Oh no, I'm giving my kids stress and making them feel like they can't do anything because I'm stressed out. You know what Jesus said? He said in Matthew 11, he said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Some of you in here, this might be exactly what your kid needs, is for you, not them, but for you to go into your Father's rest, God, to ask him for forgiveness and for help and let him in your life. And then dedicate your child to him so that he can help you with your parenting. Might seem too easy, but this is exactly what's helped me and Becky with our kids and our own marriage and our life, and I pray that you would consider this. And so with that, and with that dedicating to your child, I want to read a little more from this book. I recommend getting it. Again, it's called Power of a Praying Parent. Here's what it's like then. She describes what it's like living as a parent who is co-parenting with God, with your child. It says, "Important part of our job was to keep the details of our child's life covered in prayer. In doing this, I learned to identify every concern, fear, worry, or possible scenario that came into my mind as a prompting by the Holy Spirit to pray for that particular thing. Are you taking your worries right to God, who cares for you? We're to cast all our anxiety and worries on him because he cares for you. As I covered Christopher in prayer, her son, and released him into God's hands, God released my mind from that particular concern. That doesn't mean that once I prayed for something, I never prayed about it again, but at least for a time, I was relieved of the burden. When it surfaced again, I prayed about it again. God didn't promise that nothing bad would ever happen to my child, but praying released the power of God to work in his life, and I could enjoy more peace in the process. All of us, our kids, would benefit from us having more peace, even about them. We don't want to limit what God could do in our children by clutching them to ourselves and trying to parent them alone. If we're not positive that God is in control of our children's lives, we'll be ruled by fear. And the only way to be sure that God is in control is to surrender our hold and allow him full access to our lives." Wow. Surrender that control. "The way to do that is to live according to his word and his ways and pray to him about everything. We can trust God to take care of our children even better than we can. When we release our children into the Father's hands and acknowledge that he is in control of their lives and ours, both we and our children will have greater peace. We can't be everywhere, but God can. We can't see everything, but God can. We can't know everything, but God can. No matter what age our children are, releasing them into God's hands is a sign of our faith and trust in him and is the first step towards making a difference in their lives. Prayer for our children begins there. We can't do it alone. I pray that we all would allow God and his peace and his knowledge and his power in on what we're doing with our kids so that we can thrive as parents. And, you know, in this book, it's had a lot of different prayers. And so I thought to end, We'll do some questions afterwards, but I thought, if you're the praying type, she has a prayer that I thought I could read and we can pray together if you're into that. One that was really helpful for me reading. This is about our kids and this issue of giving up control. So if you want to join with me, you can. She writes, So Lord, I come to you in Jesus' name and I give my kid to you. I'm convinced that you alone know what is best for them. You alone know what they need. I release them to you and to care for and protect. God, I commit myself to pray for everything concerning them that I can think of or that you put upon my heart. Teach me how to pray and guide me in what to pray about, God. Help me to not impose my own will when I'm praying for them, but rather enable me to pray that your will be done in his life or her. Thank you, God, that I can partner with you in raising them and that I don't have to do it alone. I'm grateful, God, that I don't have to rely on the world's unreliable and ever-changing methods for child rearing, but that I can have clear directions from your word and wisdom as I pray to you for answers. Thank you, God, for the precious gift of our children. Because your word says that every good gift comes from you, I know that you have given them to me to care for and raise. Help me to do that. Show me places where I continue to hang on to them and enable me to release them to your protection, guidance, and counsel. Help me to not live in fear of possible dangers, but in the joy and peace of knowing that you are in control, God. I rely on you for everything. In this day, I trust my child to you and release them into your hands. And I just want to add to this prayer, God, we pray that if anyone here has never talked to you before or prayed for your forgiveness, that they would pray right now, God, I need your help with parenting. I can't do this alone. I need your help in my life, and I receive your forgiveness. Please forgive me, God, and enter my life and help me do this. Amen. All right. Did anyone want to make a comment or maybe a story about how you've seen God provide for your kid through a hard time or a question about what we talked about?
I want to let you guys know, we'll have the PowerPoint and the teaching up on our website so you guys can get those too.
Hi, I'm really nervous. I usually don't talk at these things, but I will say I have a story of how God showed me his sovereignty. I have a now 7-year-old, then 6-year-old, who this summer nearly died. And it was the first day of summer vacation, and she scaled a dresser, knowing she shouldn't. You know, this was something we've talked about, and had a fish tank fall on her.
Oh, no.
It severed her arm, and if it was like a centimeter different that it hit her arm, she would have bled out in our house. And my husband and I were home when this happened. And as someone who has had a worst case scenario happen, because I'm pretty sure what happened was every parent's worst nightmare.
Yes.
In my house. And as someone who's had that happen, God was so clearly sovereign in this situation. It's like, as chaotic as you would imagine a fish tank falling on a child would be, you know, he had friends of ours 2 minutes away from our house who could come to our house, and I could leave before the ambulance left our house so I could go down to Children's Hospital. Mm. And it's been a really transformative experience for our family, because I now trust that God is sovereign with my kids. And, you know, all the things that I could have tried to prepare. Yeah. And protect my kids from, I wouldn't have thought the fish tank.
Right.
You know, the dresser didn't fall, it tipped, you know. And it was a freak accident. But the cool thing is now being on the other side of having this happen, like how God, because she suffered big time. She had 2.5 hours of emergency surgery on the first day of summer. Mm. And she suffered through this. But like the cool thing that happened is, first of all, she knew to go to God when she was suffering. Mm. So she's sitting there asking my husband if she's going to die. And she knew to go to God in this moment where like we literally were powerless. Like we couldn't do anything. saying about what had happened. It also, like, I don't know, it's allowed our family to take different kinds of chances, like with both our kids, because you can't protect them from everything. And it's also allowed our family to take different ministry chances by bringing people into our home, because otherwise it's really scary. If God's not sovereign in your kid's life, I mean, I don't know how you don't just move to protect them all the time. So. Yeah. So anyway, this is kind of timely, and it's been like a really powerful thing for me to trust my kids to God. Mm-hmm. So,
cool.
Anyway, for what it's worth.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, so good.
Well, as one of the only dads in the room.
Yeah.
Way to be.
Hey.
Representing.
So I wanted to share a little something that I don't know if you guys touched on it or not, but something that I had kind of been thinking about during your teaching. I am a firefighter, and I've been a firefighter for about 18 years. One of the easiest things that we do, or one of the, I'm sorry, not easiest, but one of the things that, especially us in the fire service, and I'm sure a lot of other people do too, is to take our identity out of what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, we are always regarded as heroes and the good guys and whatever else. And that's something that we as humans generally take a lot of stock in when we get encouraged and we get, you know, you're a firefighter and stuff. And it's really cool. I mean, I think it's awesome to do. But what if we could, it's not really a question, it's just a comment, but what if we could change that identity into God? What if we could take our identity, what if we could show our kids that we take our identity not of what we do, but who we follow? And who loves us, and who is, bear with me because I'm not very good at stalking either, but, you know, I want to instill into my kids are mostly grown, I want to instill into my kids, and my wife does too, that our identity should be revolving around God and not around what we do and who we know and on and on and on. So that's something that, and there's probably a lot of really younger parents and kids that, you know, parents of kids that are pretty young. This is something that I think helped us, my wife and I both, coming up, in that we took our identity from God, and we didn't take it from me being a firefighter or her being a staying at home mom or any number of other things that you can take your identity out of. So I wanted to share that.
I think that's really great, and it is hard. It's very tempting to take your identity from what you do or even being a parent and stuff, and I think that's great. And I think inviting our kids into that process with us, like, I'm feeling really insecure, or I'm struggling with this, I'm praying about where I'm getting my identity from, or I'm realizing that I haven't been taking my identity in this area, and modeling, even when we recognize where we're not taking our identity from God, and inviting them into the process of us taking that identity back on, which is really the most stable identity you can have, is who God, you know, your position in your relationship with God.
I think something that God's shown me with a lot of my anxiety towards my kids, and this is, you know, the darkness of my heart at times, sometimes I'm less worried about them failing for their sake, but I'm worried that the failure is going to prove that I'm a bad parent.
Oh, my God, right.
Yeah. That if they mess up or do these things or have a mistake, that just proves my deepest insecurity that I'm a failure as a parent. And praise God that the way He views us, if we've received His forgiveness, is as His son or daughter that He loves dearly, not based on how we parent.
Hi, guys. I have a couple thoughts. One, thank you for doing this. This is really cool. This is so supportive and wonderful and great. I was wondering, like, I think someone touched on already, like, I have this burden to, like, I want to tell my non-believing parents in my neighborhood about God, but I don't know how always to, like, bring it up, or I don't know if you have any, like, tips, suggestions, or experiences on, like, what's been helpful for you, like, trying to befriend people who are parents, but we live in, like, psycho culture of hyper weird, like, play date schedules, and, like, it just is a weird, you know, I don't have to explain, but it's just, there's a lot of weird things about our culture, like, what do they eat, they have gluten in it. Oh, I don't know. God. Like,
yellow but just dye, like, five,
I'm telling right. you, my it's friends crazy. Now have their babies, and I'm like, you guys would have thought I was a barbaric parent 10 years. I mean, like, yeah, I hear
it's
you.
It's crazy, but I come from a culture, right, where I'm like, duh, that's silly to obsess about those things. But we are in a culture that does. How can we be sensitive? Okay, you know, I don't want to be condescending. I don't want to be arrogant or come across like I know it all or like, that's dumb, because people have different experiences than I did, you know? Like, I was the kid like you, like, you eat cereal, good you ate, you know, like, whatever. But I don't know, I'm going on a tangent, but I guess that was just kind of like one of my questions, like, if you had any thoughts on how do you witness? How do you like bring it, you know?
I think that lots of prayer, I actually had some of the best spiritual, I feel like some of the coolest, well, I guess it keeps changing as my kids get older I get older, but some of the coolest, a bit like opportunities to talk about God when my kids were little and dealing with small children, because I think that, you know, there's this hypervigilance and we're all scared and we're all failing. Yeah. You know, if you have a friend who has never gotten angry at their kids, that's not true.
They're sedated then.
And we're terrified to talk about that stuff because of all the pressure. So I think, in my limited experience, the best things that I, like, the best conversations came out of times where it was like, I just want to rip my hair out and shake my baby. Anybody, like, you know what I mean? Like, you guys were at playgroup and I'm like, holy crap, I have like lost my temper 3 times this week over, you know, figuring out how to get the shoes tied, you know, my poor 3-year-old, they don't know how to tie shoes, but I'm getting it, you know, or, you know, bringing in marriage stuff.
Yeah.
Paul and I are struggling a lot. We've gotten into this big fight. We don't agree on this parenting thing. And I tell you what, when you bring the vulnerability in with your friends, mm-hmm. it just changes the atmosphere, because everybody else doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And everybody else is failing.
Yeah.
But we feel so afraid to talk about it because we get our identity from it. And I think that those led to the best conversations. I have no idea what I'm doing, but guess who does? God does. I mess up all the time. And the only thing that has gotten me through this situation is the forgiveness of God.
Yeah.
Because I am so messed up and I've done so many messed up things. And so I think, like, having that play group, you know, some of this stuff is a real reality for people, like food allergies. That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to feel like, well, I think we all judge everybody else who does it differently, right? Like, let's be real. But we want to definitely be careful, and we really want to speak to the fear.
Right.
Like, I notice you seem really scared that you're going to ruin your kid. I went to this teaching. They talked about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can pull things in. And we don't have to be judgmental. We're all on the same playing field, you know? Does that make sense? Sorry, I feel like I'm rambling
now.
No,
that's fine. That's good. No, that's good. Thanks.
Okay.
Becky was great at that when they were little. That's good.
You know. Just kidding.
Cool. Couple over here, and then...
I had an experience with my son last week. I grew up in a really abusive household, so naturally, I've always been really overprotective of my kids. So I'm like, okay, he's 9, you know, he deserves a little bit of freedom. So we usually go to the Whetstone Library after school, because it's close to school, and he had a book report to work on. And there is a very small area where I couldn't see him walking into the homework help center. In that time, I was like, okay, you know, it's going to be okay. He's 9. It's 8 feet that I can't see him. He'll be fine. And so he walks into the homework help center, and a full-grown male comes up and just punches him in his chest. And I didn't see this. And he comes back to me crying, and I was like, what happened? Did somebody hurt you? And he said, yes. And I said, did so-and-so hurt you? Because I helped nanny 2 other kids after school. And he said, no. And I said, well, who hurt you? And he goes, an old man. And I said, you know, oh my God, do you know what he looks like? And we got up, we started looking for him. And he said, he walked out the door. We go outside, he's not out there. And I think it was God intervening in that situation, because if I would have found that man,
he wouldn't be here today.
It would have been more traumatic. So, but God just kept me completely cavalier and just really calm. And I'm like, it's okay. You're safe. Let's go tell the librarians. They called the police. We filed a report. And I just had Satan in the back of my head saying, see what happens when you give your kids freedom? You got to reel it back in. And I know that I would be doing a huge disservice to my kids because we live in a world that is messed up.
Yeah.
And it's very unfortunate what happened. But there, you know, there is something good that can come out of this that, you know, he knows what to do if something like this happens. You know, I get to teach him, you know, you have to be aware of your surroundings. And I can't, you know, keep an eye on him 24 hours a day. And that's where God comes in, that God always sees everything. And he's a better parent than I am. So it was really hard to go through. But yeah, so I mean, I can't pull it back in. Because I wouldn't be a good parent if I did that.
Wow, so. That's really brave. That's a really good share, too. Because, yeah, that stuff, that happened to Ava. I took her to the pool once, and a kid just punched her in the face. And I was like, what the? But, yeah, I mean, like, we can't protect him from every. And we went back to that same pool, and I was like, you're going to have to get in the water and try and make friends. Not that I'm suggesting you make your son, you know, approach strange men, but. I think it's really cool just, you know, because it would be easy at that point to be like, okay, this just affirms my fear, but recognizing that it is a scary place, and like Paul was saying, like you're saying, we can't watch them all the time, and that's what's so hard.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you shared that.
Okay, so I really liked your point about the problems with being an overprotective parent, that we're not setting them up for what they will be experiencing in the real world. Yep. And you had shared that quote that we shouldn't be sheltering them from the dark side of life. So when my children were little babies, I would just stand in their room holding them and pray and thank God for allowing me to be their mother and to that we get to raise this child together. And, you know, we were on a team here. And as they got older, it was easier. It was a lot easier for me to start taking control. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And it's my job to protect them. It's my job to take care of them. And sure, God had a role there, but not. I had more of a role. I started noticing that I would not teach them about hell. I would completely like shelter them from the realities of this world, and that there are bad people. Mm-hmm. There are bad things that happen out there, and we do have an enemy that is against God. I would teach them all about God, but not about hell and not about Satan and stuff. So anyway, I started thinking about just things that are going on in this world today, like the Westerville police shootings. And we talked about that. We started, you know, talking about the realities. This happens, and school shootings and things like that. And my 3-year-old and my 5-year-old are able to articulate that is bad, and that we have a good God, and we're just able to talk through all of the problems. And I found that I have so much more relief trying not to shelter them from all of this. But saying that this is the realities, but we have such a good God, and he is opposed to these things, and, you know, being able to share truth. So thank you for that.
That's great. Yeah. You can be realistic but optimistic. That's cool. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Becky, would you want to pray?
Yes. Thanks, guys. God, I am so grateful that you are not surprised by our weakness, Lord, that you're not surprised by the things that we struggle with and the ways that we fail, by our tendencies to overprotect and want to be in control, God. These things you are not surprised by. Thank you so much for what Jesus did on the cross to pay for all of our mess, God, and all of our poor choices and failures, Lord. Thanks that you forgive us, God, and that you love us a lot. Thanks that you have given us the children that we have, that you want to teach us, God, and lead us forward, Lord, to entrust them to you and know that you're a good God, and to help them learn about that. Just thanks for all these parents here, Lord. Do pray that just for all of us, that we could grow in our understanding of your great love for us and how trustworthy you really are. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.